Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, March 6, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only weekly, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. Our focus is primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Erased: How Trump's Executive Orders Are Dismantling Diversity at Maricopa County Community Colleges. A Disaster for Arizonans. Dems blast Trump's first 6 weeks in office ahead of State of the Union. Tribal leaders sound alarm as Trump's federal cuts threaten indigenous communities. Navajo County election official charged with pulling gun, lying to police in road rage incident. Following Trump's playbook, Arizona Republicans target remote work and DEI. And let's get started. Our first story this week, Erased: How Trump's Executive Orders Are Dismantling Diversity at Maricopa County Community Colleges, by Jared McDonald Evoy, March 4, 2025. In response to President Donald Trump's threat to defund colleges and universities that engage in diversity efforts for students and staff, Maricopa County Community College District is firing workers assigned to DEI roles, removing any language around inclusivity, and stopping convocations. The Arizona Mirror obtained emails sent by administrators to staff at one of Maricopa County's 10 community colleges on February 28th, asking them to remove Black History Month from the school's homepage, remove the diversity webpage, remove maps of all gender restrooms, and unpublished convocation information. Convocation ceremonies are generally smaller events held to celebrate graduations and can often focus on groups of students who share a major or a background, such as Hispanic students or LGBTQ students. In an email, NCCC Chancellor Dr. Stephen Gonzalez told staff that the changes will not impact the larger commencement ceremonies. The changes come due to Trump's executive orders and new priorities set by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, which has put a ban on DEI and other topics in schools. Those who don't comply risk losing all of their federal funding. Based on the current state of affairs and as a public institution, we must comply with the law and enforcement guidance issued by regulatory agencies, Gonzalez said in the email to all district employees. As well-intentioned and successful as some support activities have been for our students, some may no longer be able to continue. As we continue to assess the impact of the federal guidance, additional changes may be necessary to ensure compliance with evolving requirements. MCCCD last week already shuttered its largest affinity group for LGBTQ+ staff, students, and teachers. Web pages that direct to information on Black History Month or Black student unions are already disappearing across MCCCD. The Mirror also exclusively obtained a spreadsheet being circulated inside MCCCD colleges that purports to show a list of internet links that are up for review to possibly be cut or have their language changed. Among them are Victimology, Culture and Society, Chicana and Chicano Studies, Sustainability, Sociology, Documentary Film Production, Literature, Music, Religious Studies, Psychology Courses, Multiple Associates of Arts Degrees, Amnesty International, Anthropology Club, Dungeons and Dragons, Christian Challenge, LGBTQ+, Native American Student Association, Student Honors Association. Some of the links included in the spreadsheet, such as Black History Month and the Black Student Union, have already been removed. Website language and content directly related to DEI must be modified or removed, Gonzalez said in an email to staff about the changes. College website teams will receive further guidance and directions from our district marketing and communications office to ensure we can implement changes by today's deadline. Trump's Department of Education had given colleges until February 28th to implement changes or face investigations or have federal funding withheld. Funding for district employees to attend conferences or events focusing on DEI activities, including race, identity, or national origin, is now prohibited, Gonzalez said in the email. Employees can still attend conferences as long as the focus of the events does not exclusively revolve around those topics. We recognize the importance of creating space for all voices, backgrounds, and perspectives to connect and be heard. However, these employee-specific activities can no longer take place under the present guidance we have received, Gonzalez said. Please note that student organizations are not impacted. MCCCD also ordered their employees to remove pronouns or other gender identity-related language from email signatures and business cards, telling employees to follow their brand standards guide. Gonzalez announced that MCCCD will discontinue its Diversity Advisory Council, as well as reevaluating all of MCCCD's DEI-related positions. We recognize the valuable contributions of our staff and will continue to explore ways that our staff can support our students, Gonzalez said. In the February 28th email, Gonzalez recognized that many of the moves that MCCCD had made on inclusivity had provided meaningful support to students, faculty, and staff. We ask that you join us in navigating this moment with resilience, empathy, and respect for one another, he wrote. Moments of change can be difficult, but we will move forward together, continuing to serve our students, protecting access to education, and fostering a culture where everyone is treated with dignity and respect. And that concludes this first story, Erased, How Trump's Executive Orders Are Dismantling Diversity at Maricopa County Community Colleges. Our next story, a disaster for Arizonans. Dems blast Trump's first 6 weeks in office ahead of State of the Union. By Jim Small, March 4, 2025. President Donald Trump's funding freezes, federal firings, and resulting concerns about social safety net programs have been a, quote, disaster for Arizonans, Democrats said in advance of tonight's State of the Union address. The Democratic National Committee released a report detailing what it describes as the harm Trump has brought to Arizonans during his first month in office. As Donald Trump prepares to take the stage tonight, there's a reason he is the least popular president in modern American history at this point in his term, DNC Chair Ken Martin said in a written statement. Trump has been a disaster for Arizonans. His dangerous funding freezes and mass firings have put seniors, kids, and families already struggling to make ends meet at risk. The DNC report highlights several specific concerns for Arizona, including state officials unable to access federal funds intended to modernize Arizona's electric grid and improve local energy efficiency, federal employee terminations at Veterans Affairs and Department of Agriculture offices across the state, paused funding for Colorado River water management programs, delayed access to funds for community health centers, potential impacts to nearly 2 million Arizonans who rely on Medicaid and approximately 925,000 state residents who receive SNAP benefits. Rising unemployment claims, with nearly 12,000 Arizonans filing for unemployment since January. According to the report, 9 mass layoffs have occurred in Arizona since Trump took office in January, affecting nearly 1,300 workers. The largest reported layoff included 855 people at bankrupt EV manufacturer Nikola, 540 in Phoenix, and 315 in Coolidge. The document also cites Department of Labor data showing weekly unemployment filings ranging from 2,740 to 3,245 Arizona residents through February. Martin accused congressional Republicans of advancing a budget plan that would take money out of the pockets of working Arizonans, kick millions off of their health insurance, and take food off the table of low-income families in order to finance a massive tax handout to the richest 1%. Trump is expected to address economic policies during tonight's speech to Congress, which will begin at 7 p.m. The report also details specific demographic information about social program recipients in Arizona, noting that Medicaid covers 36% of Arizona children, 46% of births in the state, and 53% of nursing home residents. More than two-thirds of SNAP recipients in Arizona are families with children, according to the data. And that concludes this story. A disaster for Arizonans, Dems blast Trump's first 6 weeks in office ahead of State of the Union. Our next story, tribal leaders sound alarm as Trump's federal cuts threaten indigenous communities. They told U.S. House lawmakers that the administration's, quote, chainsaw approach to government cuts will disproportionately harm Indian country. By Shandeen Silversmith, March 3, 2025. From securing funding for Indian health services and ongoing water settlements to increasing investments in infrastructure, education, and law enforcement, many indigenous leaders and organizations are raising the alarm about the devastation that federal funding cuts could bring for Native Americans. More than 60 tribal leaders and organizations from across Indian country testified over 3 days to a U.S. House of Representatives Appropriations Subcommittee on the federal funding needs of indigenous people and their communities nationwide. I know there's never enough funding to go around, Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis said, and he appreciates how the subcommittee has consistently set aside several days to hear Indian country's funding priorities. It is the process that starts the funding decisions for tribal programs, staffing, and priorities for this administration, he added. Tribal leaders and organizations gave 5-minute testimonies to the subcommittee from February 25th to February 27th. Lewis used his 5 minutes to discuss the Trump administration's actions and their impact on his community. There is real fear within tribal communities about what is happening in Washington, D.C., he said, referencing the freezing of federal funding and the mass firing of federal employees across the government. Lewis said that many may applaud the slashing of federal funding because they have been convinced it is fraught with waste and abuse, or even those who see federal employees as a new enemy. I doubt you will hear a tribal leader argue that the federal government can't be made more efficient or that there aren't places where cuts could be made, he said. After all, we have been dealing with the federal government longer than any other group in this country. However, Lewis said the chainsaw approach of indiscriminately cutting employees taken by President Donald Trump and billionaire businessman Elon Musk, who has been directing the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, will not create efficiencies or save billions of dollars. He added that the cuts are being made without considering how they will impact services. rather than making government more efficient and effective, it is creating a federal workforce that is paralyzed by fear. Lewis called the administration's actions destabilizing and said they will have a disproportionate impact on Indian country. The government-to-government relationship is only as strong as our federal partner, he said, and right now there is a real concern that the federal side of this partnership has the real potential of being dismantled. Lewis said that reforms can be and should be made, but, he said, they should be made in a way that provides insight, dignity, and consultation with tribal governments and among those with the experience and knowledge of tribal programs. It is up to this committee to make those decisions, he said, ensuring certainty among indigenous peoples that the essential programs they depend on won't be cut. Certainty that our tribal sovereignty will be upheld and honored, he added. Treaty and trust obligations. Multiple tribal leaders and organizations urged the subcommittee to help them hold the administration accountable for the federal funding allocated to indigenous peoples and their communities. Tribal programs are not DEI initiatives. Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community President Martin Javier said, referring to the administration's effort to eliminate all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the federal government. They are a fulfillment of treaty and trust obligations and must not be subject to arbitrary reductions or freezes. During the 3-day subcommittee hearing, tribal leaders and organizations emphasized their community's various needs, highlighting issues ranging from insufficient law enforcement to the necessity of sustainable roads on tribal land to the importance of urban native programs. Indian country continues to struggle with generations of crumbling infrastructure, limited access to health care, underfunded law enforcement, and an ongoing fight for clean water, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin said. These issues aren't just numbers in a budget. Nigrin said it is the everyday realities of Navajo and Native families throughout Indian country. As an example, he told the subcommittee about the Navajo Nation's dire need for emergency medical services support, highlighting how people needing an ambulance often wait 45 minutes or longer. If an ambulance is even available, he added, noting that the Navajo EMS answers roughly 20,000 calls a year and their funding has not been increased in decades. This is a matter of life and death, he said. We ask for dedicated funding for our tribal EMS, including a $4 million allocation specifically for the Navajo Nation. Funding needs for public safety were a big concern for many tribal leaders, including the San Carlos Apache tribe. San Carlos Apache Chairman Terry Rambler shared that the San Carlos Apache Police Department has only 19 officers and would need at least 75 to adequately patrol their large tribal land area. Rambler said San Carlos Apache police officers work 12-hour shifts, patrol over 360,000 miles per year, and endure extreme situations made worse by the lack of an adequate facility. Our police department is so severely underfunded and public safety is severely compromised, he said. Our police department cannot compete with other places that offer higher salaries and better benefits. Other jurisdictions actively recruit away our officers. During the hearing, Subcommittee Chairman Mike Simpson, a Republican from Idaho, acknowledged the importance of keeping police officers and firefighters in indigenous communities rather than allowing the community to serve merely as a training ground for them to move on to areas with better pay and benefits. Those are important issues we've got to work on, he said. Tehana Odom Vice Chairwoman Carla Johnson shared with the subcommittee that there are over 700 miles of Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA, roads on her reservation, and they are all in poor condition. The BIA road maintenance program has been underfunded for years and has a huge backlog, she said. Only 13% of BIA roads nationwide are in acceptable condition. Johnson said that more funding must be provided for the BIA Roads Program because the roads within their community are how tribal citizens access essential services, how federal and tribal law enforcement engage in border security, and how EMS responds. This funding is critical for the safety of tribal members, law enforcement, emergency responders, and all others using our reservation road, she added. The needs of Indigenous peoples do not stop at the boundaries of their tribal lands. An Urban Indian Health Institute director, Abigail Echo Hawk, used her testimony to remind the subcommittee that Indigenous peoples in urban areas deserve the same type of support. Echo Hawk said that about 76% of Native American people live off their tribal homelands and reside in urban areas. We need to remember the urban Indian population, she said. The treaty and trust responsibility for our health and wellness did not end when we stepped off the reservation. Echo Hawk called on the subcommittee to support funding for the Indian Health Services and Urban Native Health Programs, essential resources and services for many Indigenous people. What I am asking you is to fight back with us, she said. Fight back to ensure that we have the resources and services as an urban program to get the treatment for those coming to us. Senators and representatives call on administration. Amid growing concerns about implementing the Trump administration's executive order on government work efficiency, over 100 Democratic U.S. senators and representatives signed a letter to Trump, Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum, and U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., reminding them to uphold the federal government's commitments to tribal nations. The congresspeople noted that the U.S. government has trust and treaty responsibilities to tribal nations, which are implemented through various agencies to provide tribes with vital health care, education, and social services. Your administration's recent executive actions undermined legally required commitments to sovereign tribal nations, existing federal law, and the federal-tribal government-to-government relationship, they wrote in the letter. The letter was headed by Representative Melanie Stansbury and Senator Martin Heinrich, Democrats from New Mexico. In total, 113 elected officials signed the letter from the Senate and Congress, including all of the Democratic members of Arizona's delegation. A spokesperson for Arizona Senator Ruben Gallego said he joined his colleagues in urging the Trump administration to protect resources in Indian country and fulfill the government's promises, the federal government's promises, because he is committed to standing up for Native communities in Arizona. The recent funding freezes and mass firings within agencies like the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Indian Health Services only jeopardize essential services and create chaos, the spokesperson said in a statement emailed to the Arizona Mirror. The letter focuses on the administration's executive order, quote, implementing the President's Department of Government Efficiency Workforce Optimization Initiative and its impact on Indian country. The congresspeople indicate that the administration has abruptly fired thousands of federal workers across various government agencies. They have received reports of more than 2,600 at the Department of the Interior, over 100 at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, more than 40 at the Bureau of Indian Education, and approximately 950 Indian Health Services employees. Beyond the legal questions surrounding the ability to fire employees without specifying performance or conduct issues, any unilateral attempts to disrupt existing services administered or funded by the BIA, BIE, IHS, or tribal serving entities would directly violate the trust and treaty obligations of the United States to tribal nations, the letter states. The leaders urged the administration to take immediate action to halt, exempt, and reverse any federal offices, services, or funding that serve Indian country from existing or future executive actions. Tribal nations are sovereign governments with a unique legal and political relationship to the United States, the letter states. These trust and treaty obligations, in some cases, predate both the establishment of all of the agencies in question, as well as the United States itself. And that concludes this story. Tribal leaders sound alarm as Trump's federal cuts threaten indigenous communities. Next up, Navajo County election official charged with pulling gun, lying to police in road rage incident. Newly elected recorder Timothy Jordan said he acted in self-defense. A felony conviction could bar him from the job. By Jen Fifield of VoteBeat, March 3, 2025. A Navajo County grand jury has indicted the county's recorder, Timothy Jordan, on three criminal charges in connection with a road rage incident just before the November election. The February 1 indictment accuses Jordan of disorderly conduct with a weapon, a felony charge, as well as two misdemeanors, disorderly conduct and false reporting to a law enforcement agency. VoteBeat exclusively requested and obtained the indictment. Jordan, a Republican, defeated the Democratic incumbent Michael Sample in the November 5th election. As recorder, Jordan controls voter registration and early voting in the northern Arizona county. State law prohibits anyone convicted of a felony from holding a public office. The Navajo County Attorney's Office initially transferred the case to Coconino County to prosecute because Jordan is now an elected official, according to a spokesperson for the office. But Coconino prosecutors then presented evidence of the alleged offense to a Navajo County grand jury, according to the Coconino County attorney, because a criminal case must be heard by a grand jury in the jurisdiction where the offense occurred. At an arraignment on Monday in Navajo County Superior Court, the court entered a not guilty plea on Jordan's behalf, according to the court clerk's office. Jordan, 46, allegedly pulled out a gun during a conflict with two 18-year-old men who had been tailing his truck in an SUV on October 23rd, according to a report from the Show Law Police Department. The incident took place near the parking lot of his child's school. He said in an interview with VoteBeat that he pulled out the gun in self-defense after he, quote, felt in fear for my life. Jordan's accounts of the incident have shifted according to the police report. He initially told the officer who responded to the scene that he did not pull out his gun, the report said, but later acknowledged that he took it out of his waistband as he approached the SUV. According to the police report, Jordan also initially told the officer that the other men had guns, but then later told him they did not. In an interview with VoteBeat last week, Jordan repeated his claim that the other men had guns and denied telling the officer that they did not. Asked about this, a spokesperson for the Show Law Police Department said the report reflects the officer's recollection of what Jordan said. For their part, those two men later told a police officer they did not have guns and never got out of the SUV, according to the police report. Officers did not find any guns in the SUV. When the police officer later asked Jordan why he had not been honest initially about taking out his gun, Jordan brought up his campaign for recorder, according to the police report. Timothy told me he was scared and nervous because he was running for office and knew what was at stake, the officer wrote in the report. Jordan was arrested and released after paying a $3,500 bail. The driver of the SUV was initially charged with disorderly conduct and criminal damage. His charges were dismissed, according to the Navajo County Attorney's Office. The passenger was fined $250 for disorderly conduct, according to court records. VoteBeat was not able to find contact information for either man. Jordan said he will present evidence to the court that he acted in self-defense. He declined to share that evidence with VoteBeat. He said he believes the charges against him are politically motivated. Jordan, an Army veteran who recently worked in property management, moved to the area in 2021 and told VoteBeat the recorder's race was his first bid for public office. Jordan told police he was hurrying to pick up his child from school at around 3:30 p.m. on October 23rd when he came to a stop sign at the same time as the SUV. He told an officer that he kind of rolled through the stop sign. The driver of the SUV told police that he was upset that Jordan had cut him off. The accounts of what happened diverged from there, as documented in the police report. Jordan said the SUV began tailing him aggressively, while the SUV driver said that Jordan brake-checked him. Jordan pulled over at the entrance to the school's parking lot, and both sides told police they felt blocked by the other. Jordan then got out of his truck. He told the officer that three men got out of the SUV, but the two men the officer interviewed said no one got out of their vehicle and there was not a third person in the SUV. Jordan told the officer the driver and the front passenger began waving guns. At this point in the interview, the officer wrote, "Timothy made a gesture with both of his hands as if he were shooting pistols from his hip." He described the two guns, including the models, to the officer. He said they were pointing the guns at the ground, not at him. When interviewing the SUV driver later, the officer wrote, "The driver appeared confused when he told him Jordan had said they had pistols in their hands. He told the officer they did not have guns and did not own any." The police report notes that the men were yelling at each other, and the officer wrote that Jordan told him he was trying to use a tactic that is used to scare a bear away by yelling louder than the other males. The men both told the officer, separately, that they knew Jordan had a gun at that point because they saw him reach for his waistband. The driver of the SUV told the officer he then sped off because he was afraid. Initially, Jordan told the officer that he had a firearm in his truck, but that he never pulled it out. "I told Timothy he could have told me the truth and didn't have to lie," the officer wrote. "Timothy said he agreed and said he shouldn't have lied to me." Later, the men in the SUV drove back to the school parking lot and threw a cup full of liquid at Jordan's truck, the police report said. In an interview with VoteBeat, Jordan pointed to that, saying the other people involved in the incident wouldn't have returned to do that if they were afraid, and if he was some, quote, crazy gunslinging guy. And with that, we conclude this story. Navajo County election official charged with pulling gun, lying to police in road rage incident. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Our next story. Following Trump's playbook, Arizona Republicans target remote work and DEI. Senate votes to require in-person government work while House advances measure limiting diversity programs. By Caitlin Sievers, March 3, 2025. Following the lead of the Trump administration, Republicans in the Arizona legislature moved forward with proposals that would force government workers back to the office and ban diversity, equity, and inclusion. Both chambers of the state legislature are led by small Republican majorities, and many of them, especially members of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus, are MAGA diehards. As Trump and unelected billionaire Elon Musk continue to fire federal workers, regardless of their performance or how crucial their jobs are to public safety, Arizona's GOP legislatures are attempting to bring his agenda to fruition in the Grand Canyon state. Senate President Warren Peterson's Senate Bill 1237 would bar the state's government employees from working remotely, regardless of their job title or duties. The Trump administration is pushing for federal employees who work remotely to return to the office or quit, claiming without evidence earlier this month that people who work from home only actually work 10 to 20% of the time, and that instead they're out playing golf. Trump played golf on 9 of his first 30 days of his term at an estimated cost of mere more than $10 million. Peterson's rationale for the return to office is similar to Trump's. As we have seen play out from the Trump administration, it is important for all full-time government employees to be accountable to their supervisors, Peterson said in a statement. This accountability, which can only be achieved through in-person work, increases productivity. The Senate passed Peterson's proposal February 27th by a vote of 17 to 12 along party lines. Brian Sikma, a lobbyist for the Foundation for Government Accountability, pushed for Peterson's bill during a February 19th Senate Regulatory Affairs and Government Efficiency Committee meeting. The Foundation for Government Accountability is a right-wing think tank with a history of seeking to curtail social safety net programs and advocacy for reducing child labor restrictions. Economists have called some of the studies by the think tank, quote, junk science. Democratic Senator Mitzi Epstein of Tempe said that while she loves working with her colleagues in person, SB 1237 puts strict regulations on government employees, which could prevent hiring the best person for a job and ban flexibility that might make things less efficient. What would happen if someone with the best expertise lives out of state, she asked, or if someone who does great work for Arizona needed to move out of state temporarily for a few months? Peterson said he would make amendments to make the plan more workable, but the only exception in the version of the bill headed to the House is for a sick employee to work from home with permission from their supervisor. Studies about the productivity of those who work from home have been mixed, including a recent one from Stanford that found workers with hybrid schedules that allow them to work in the office and from home remain just as productive as full-time office workers. DEI. House Concurrent Resolution 2042, sponsored by House Speaker Steve Montenegro, a Republican from Goodyear, would ask voters in 2026 to strengthen prohibitions on preferential treatment and discrimination based on race or ethnicity in public education, hiring, and contracting. Montenegro's bill follows Trump's executive orders banning diversity, equity, and inclusion from the federal government, getting rid of positions that promote DEI, as well as programs to facilitate it, and threatening to withhold federal funding to schools that continue the programs. Montenegro told the members of the House Government Committee during a February 12th meeting that the resolution would help restore colorblindness to our institutions and to ensure that our states treat students, employees, job applicants, and small business owners equally, regardless of race. DEI has become a boogeyman of sorts for some Republicans and far-right commentators who have a habit of claiming, without evidence, that any woman or person of color who has a high status or difficult job was hired due to DEI policies and not because of their qualifications. Vanya Guevara, a lobbyist for CHISPA, C-H-I-S-P-A, Arizona, who came to the U.S. from El Salvador as a child, told the committee that it would be great if all applicants and candidates for jobs and colleges were treated the same. But she knows from her own family experience that isn't the case. There are instances where I've literally had to tell a loved one to change their name so that they would be taken into consideration for an important position, Guevara said, even though that person was highly qualified. She told the committee that DEI initiatives serve to prevent harms of racism instead of promoting them. The reality is, and I know this from a lived experience, our members know this from a lived experience, racism and discrimination, unfortunately, does exist, Guevara said. Representative John Gillette, a Republican from Kingman, who is white, railed against DEI, saying it contributed to every little fringe group asking for a leg up, adding that he believed Guevara became successful through merit and nothing else. Guevara told the committee that she obtained a law degree with help of programs that assisted immigrants in gaining access to higher education. If you want to succeed, you do this on your own merit. We don't give you a free handout, Gillette said. Representative Walt Blackman, the chairman of the committee, who is black, acknowledged that institutionalized racism exists in the United States, but said he still opposes DEI policies because they tell black people that they need someone else's help to be successful, which he said was insulting. The resolution was approved by the House February 25th by a party line vote of 33-27 and will next head to the Senate. And that concludes this story. Following Trump's playbook, Arizona Republicans target remote work and DEI. Next, we have another story by Shandeen Silversmith. Federal office closures to hit Bureau of Indian Affairs, including in Arizona. March 4, 2025. As President Donald Trump's administration moves to shut down federal office spaces, several tribes across the country will be left without a Bureau of Indian Affairs office space, including in Arizona. A list released by the U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resources Committee reveals the scale of the General Services Administration's planned federal office closures across the Department of the Interior. These include 25 BIA offices, more than one in every four BIA locations nationwide. U.S. House Natural Resources Committee Ranking Member Jared Huffman, a Democrat from California, said the impact on the BIA will be devastating. These offices are already underfunded, understaffed, and stretched beyond capacity, struggling to meet the needs of tribal communities who face systemic barriers to federal resources, Huffman said in a press release. The BIA closures include three offices in Arizona, a law enforcement office in Fredonia, an airport terminal building in Sholo, and the Western Region Regional Office in Phoenix. Closing these offices will further erode services like public safety, economic development, education, and housing assistance, services that tribal nations rely on for their well-being and self-determination, Huffman said. The BIA works with tribal governments and tribal members across the country through administration of a variety of programs and services, including employment and job training assistance, social services, natural resources management on trust lands, agriculture and economic development, law enforcement and detention services, and the administration of tribal courts, implementation of land and water claim settlements. BIA office in Phoenix is located at 2600 North Central Avenue, and it serves 53 tribes in the western region, including 20 from Arizona. The office has a planned lease termination date of August 31. The Arizona Mirror contacted the BIA for comment on the slated closures, and its Office of Public Affairs issued a statement. The Department of the Interior is committed to upholding federal responsibilities to tribal communities. Indian Affairs offices remain open and continue to provide services, the statement said. The Department of the Interior is working with GSA to ensure facilities will be available for the continued delivery of BIA services. No additional details were provided on what these closures would mean for the area or the tribes the office serves. The General Services Administration plans to terminate leases for more than 2 million square feet of office space used by the Department of the Interior across the country. The result will be closing 164 offices, including 34 U.S. Geological Survey locations and 33 National Park Service facilities. Shuttering these physical locations goes hand in glove with DOJ's destroy the government approach, and it will make their illegal cuts even more challenging to reverse, Huffman said in a press release, referring to the so-called Department of Government Efficiency that has been led by billionaire Elon Musk and tasked with gutting the federal government. The economic fallout will ripple across America, hitting small towns and cities where federal offices are many communities' only lifelines. GSA Public Affairs Officer Mary Sims said the agency's vision under Acting Administrator Stephen Ikian includes reducing deferred maintenance liabilities, supporting federal employees' return to the office, and taking advantage of a stronger private-government partnership to manage the workforce of the future. GSA is reviewing all options to optimize our footprint and building utilization, Sims said in a statement emailed to the Arizona Mirror. A component of our space consolidation plan will be the termination of many soft-term leases. She said the extent of the termination affects public-facing facilities and existing tenants, but the GSA is working with agency partners to secure suitable alternative space. In many cases, this will allow us to increase space utilization and obtain improved terms, Sims added. And that concludes this story. Federal office closures to hit Bureau of Indian Affairs, including in Arizona. Our next story, Arizona Dreamer teacher attends State of the Union amid Trump's deportation surge, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, March 4, 2025. President Donald Trump is expected to celebrate his aggressive anti-immigration agenda Tuesday night when he addresses a joint session of Congress and has invited several people with family members who were victims of crimes allegedly committed by immigrants to hear his speech to symbolize the need for a continued crackdown. Meanwhile, Arizona's freshman Congresswoman, Yasemin Ansari, who represents a heavily Hispanic district, will be sitting in the crowd with DACA recipient Yadira Garcia. Garcia has lived in Arizona since she was 7 years old and is a recipient of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals policy, which President Barack Obama implemented in 2012 to offer applicants a work permit and temporary shield from deportation. Today, she teaches high school students math in Tolleson. Garcia said she hopes her presence in the nation's capital can put a face on the more than 3 million dreamers who consider the country home and help anti-immigrant politicians realize that undocumented people aren't a threat, but a benefit. Just because we are undocumented doesn't make us criminals. It's just the fact that we're missing a 9-digit number, she said, referring to the Social Security number that citizens receive. We're people that have lives. I contribute to this country every day. Ansari, a Democrat and former Phoenix City Council member who was elected to Congress in November, criticized the Trump administration's hostility toward immigrants, saying that she's concerned about the impacts on her district, which spans Phoenix, Glendale, and Guadalupe, and has a voting population that is 51% Hispanic. Since Donald Trump has taken office, there have been relentless, cruel, and un-American attacks on immigrant families, she said during an online news conference on Tuesday afternoon. Trump's first 6 weeks in office have been marked by a focus on deporting as many people as possible, regardless of their actual legal status. Under the direction of the White House and leaders appointed by Trump, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials have detained migrants showing up to official check-ins or court hearings, prioritized the deportation of unaccompanied children seeking asylum, and detained a Puerto Rican veteran in New Jersey and a veteran with legal permanent residency in Arizona. Ansari, whose parents fled Iran after its government was taken over by a theocratic regime and some of their family members were killed, has been a vocal advocate for immigrant rights. She was the lone member of Arizona's federal delegation to vote against the Lake and Riley Act earlier this year, which mandates the detention without bail of undocumented people arrested for low-level crimes like shoplifting, even if they haven't been convicted. Just hours ahead of Trump's address, Ansari called for immigration reform, accusing the administration of doing nothing to reform the country's broken immigration system. Last week, Democrats in the House introduced legislation to give permanent legal status to Dreamers, titled the American Dream and Promise Act. Ansari, along with U.S. Representatives Greg Stanton and Raul Grijalva, signed on as co-sponsors. The bill is likely to meet a dead end in the Republican-controlled chamber. Only one Republican, U.S. Representative Maria Salazar from Florida, has signed on to support it. Ansari acknowledged that Republicans are unwilling to go against Trump, who ran on a campaign promise to oversee mass deportations, but said she's optimistic about the possibility of increased bipartisanship, noting that last year Republicans and Democrats worked together on an immigration reform package. That legislation, however, was later killed at Trump's direction, who opposed giving Biden a win on border security before he could campaign on the issue. Either way, Ansari said the new bill is important because it serves to both contrast Republican priorities and to give Americans a lens into what Democrats are backing. It's really important for us as Democrats to put forward our own legislation, our own vision on what immigration reform looks like, she said. It's important that our vision is clear and we have a counter-narrative to all of the hostility and hate from the Republicans. And while some Republicans might point to Arizona's overwhelming support for Trump last year and the easy passage of Prop 314, which made it a state crime for migrants to cross the state's southern border anywhere but at an official port of entry, as proof of voters in the Grand Canyon state want more aggressive border policies, Ansari said her constituents are asking for humane, pro-immigrant proposals. And she added, Arizonans as a whole have previously shown support for Dreamers, casting their ballots in 2022 to give undocumented students seeking a college education the same tuition rates as their peers. We have passed propositions in our state to make in-state tuition the same for Dreamers as it is for anyone in our state, and that's because Dreamers are Arizonans, she said. Dreamers are Americans. They're our friends, our neighbors, they pay taxes, they're teachers, they're moms, and it's long overdue. Garcia said she's hopeful the legislation can prevail despite the uphill battle it faces, because it's nerve-wracking to live with constant uncertainty about her future in the country. It's been tough. Every 2 years, I find myself having to renew my DACA documentation to see what's going to happen next, she said. I still find myself wondering, what's going to be next? Am I going to be able to continue teaching? What's going to happen to my son? And that concludes this story. Arizona Dreamer teacher attends State of the Union amid Trump's deportation surge. And finally, lawmakers aim to nuke all zoning elections to stop Scottsdale voters from blocking Axon's HQ. GOP lawmakers and Axon claim their legislation will prevent, quote, special interests from blocking development. By Jared McDonald Evoy, March 4, 2025. Republican lawmakers want to make it impossible for Arizonans to let local voters challenge development projects at the ballot, so that Axon can build a massive new headquarters and housing project in Scottsdale without opposition. If the proposal passes, voters in cities and towns across the Grand Canyon state would be unable to mobilize to overturn zoning chances their city councils make to allow for a variety of development ventures, including efforts like the one in 2023 that ultimately led to voters blocking Tempe from rezoning land so the Arizona Coyotes could build a $2.3 billion entertainment district and stadium. But the two bills being pushed by GOP lawmakers face an uphill battle from their own party, as well as local neighborhood advocates. Representative Joseph Chaplick, a Republican from Scottsdale, has been strongly opposed to the two bills that Axon and some of his Republican colleagues support, and has reportedly gotten into heated arguments at the Capitol with Axon CEO Patrick Smith about the legislation. Chaplick, like many in Scottsdale, opposes Axon's proposed campus. After the city council rezoned land near Hayden and the Loop 101 for the sprawling 74-acre campus, local activists gathered signatures to send the decision to the ballot in a voter referendum, which must happen by November 2026. Smith called the campaign against Axon's plans driven by special interests at a press conference on the lawn of the Arizona House of Representatives on Tuesday. Smith, flanked by Republican lawmakers and surrounded by employees, decried the referendum process Tuesday, saying the opposition to Exxon's development project was abused by outside special interests. He also claimed the process has never been used by locals, even citing the 2023 Coyotes Stadium referendum in Tempe. That proposal went before voters because opponents had threatened to refer it to the ballot, so the city council opted to put it to a public vote. Longtime Tempe resident Ron Tapscott, who helped lead the effort on the referendum against the arena project in Tempe, called Smith's comment an outright lie. "We did it all collaboratively," Tapscott said, of the multiple local organizations that worked to oppose the Coyotes Stadium and development project. "So to think this initiative was outside special interests is farcical." Arizona's constitution and laws are broadly permissive of referenda challenging the decisions of state and local governments, and it's not uncommon for residents of a city or town to send local decisions, often involving development that the council favors but that nearby residents oppose, to the ballot for a definitive thumbs up or down. But House Bill 2925 and Senate Bill 1352 would eradicate such challenges by changing state law to declare that any application for rezoning is deemed an administrative act, which is not subject to a referendum. Senator David Cowan, a Republican from Sierra Vista, who sponsored the Senate legislation, said that the bill is about keeping Exxon in Arizona, as well as keeping outside special interests from controlling rezoning decisions. "We are going to fight tooth and nail to keep you guys here," Gowan said to the crowd of Exxon employees. Smith told reporters that California special interest groups tried to shake them down after Exxon won approval from Scottsdale for the project, leading to paid signature gatherers creating a referendum against the project. "The referendum process sounds good at first," Smith said, adding that it is always driven by special interests. Chaplick posted on social media last month that Senate President Warren Peterson had pledged not to consider the bill. "The Exxon lobbyist bill is dead in the AZ Senate. This is a huge win for Scottsdale voters. Senate President Warren Peterson has assured me it will not move forward an inch," he wrote. Peterson did not respond to a request for comment. And we're going to have to leave that story there, but I'm sure it will be coming up again in the future as they consider this bill. That's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Don't forget, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. And you can also take Sun Sounds with you with our mobile app for Sun Sounds of Arizona for Apple and Android phones. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll see you next week.